You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today will be a special just 1 hour show. I'm still a little bit sick, and rather than give a 2 hour show and push it and maybe not be well Monday, I decided to cut it short and do a 1 hour show. Today is a story that has been in the news and will be in the news, I think, for the next 3 years. And that's the fact that we have a thousand days left of the Obama administration. So that's both the good news and the bad news. It's bad news because his economic policies have simply failed. We've had persistently high unemployment rates, and now the president in many speeches says his number one challenge and number one priority is income equality. Income equality? Mr. President, if everybody had a job, you wouldn't need to worry about income equality. We have at least 10 million people unemployed. A job would enable them to pay for the goods and services they need for themselves and their family. You have another at least 10 million that are underemployed, that can only find part-time jobs, and usually less than 30 hours, in many cases less than 20. And that's the price the American people are paying for an economic policy that simply didn't work. Remember when the stimulus package was passed and his advisors said, if this package is passed, we should see by now under 6%, actually under 5% unemployment rates. Yet the unemployment rate today is at 6.7%, just a tenth lower than the day he walked into the White House. So economic policies and ideas do have consequences, and the consequences have been the significant number of American people have not been able to find full-time jobs, good-paying full-time jobs. That's the answer to income equality, is that every American that wants to work and can work at a good-paying job. But that's not the situation that we've had for over 5 years, and we have another three more to go until this president leaves office, and we're counting the days. We're at 1,000 and counting. And I, for those that are new to my show, the way you listen to this show is go to prankpops.wordpress.com, and at the very top you'll have links to the last usually 60 to 70 shows, and at the very bottom of the page you'll have links to all my shows. But in between, and this is important, especially today, I will have information pertaining to what I'll be discussing on the show. And what I want to discuss is equality versus liberty. Because it's clear that the president, like most socialists, wants to emphasize equality. And that's equality of outcome. Not equality before the law, or equality before your creator, or equal opportunity. What he wants is equality of outcome. That's what he's driving at when he points out to income equality. And what's very, very misleading is you get the impression that if you're, for example, let's say you're in the bottom 10% of income earners, that you're stuck there forever. That's simply not the case in the United States. And that's what's very, very misleading about these economic statistics, that people over their earning lifetimes, as they pursue a career, as they pursue education, initially many people start in the lower 10% or in some cases, the bottom 25%. But as they become educated, as they have more and more job skills, they tend to rise. Sometimes they have good years, very good years, sometimes poor years, but no one is stuck in any percentile, whether it's the first, the 10th, or the 25th percentile. But if you listen to the president, you get that impression. And that is what he's made his number one priority. It's a fool's errand, because what's important are economic incentives. Economic incentives encourage people to work, encourage people, for example, to get a college education. You want strong economic incentives. Now, the president likes to talk about social justice. Is it just for someone that's lazy to get the same income as someone that's hardworking? I think the overwhelming majority of American people would say absolutely not. Yet that is where ultimately income equality and the emphasis on it goes. One of the examples I like is, if you truly believe in income equality, let's just take the example of a poker game. Many students and people play poker on the weekends. Friendly games, low-stake games. And what happens is some weeks, one or more individuals might win, others might lose. It does change over time. But I've never gone to a poker game where after the night is over, the people return the money that they've won. Now, that's a game of chance. There's definitely a skill involved if you played poker. There's a certain amount of bluffing. There's a certain amount of ability to count cards and what cards have been shown. So good poker players can earn money. But most people play usually on the weekends, a Friday or a Saturday night, get together with their friends and play a friendly game of poker. Some people are good at it. Some people aren't. Most do it simply for the pleasure. There are people that frown upon gambling. I have not gambled in decades. But when I was growing up, both in college and in grad school, I did play poker, and a little bit in the Air Force, not much. Didn't have time, but it were friendly games. No one really lost a lot of money. You know, maybe 20 bucks at most, 25 tops. And some people won, but not a lot of money, maybe 50 bucks. But at the end of the night, you didn't return the money. That wouldn't make much sense, but that's what ultimately you're talking about with income equality, where everyone should earn more or less the same. Is that fair? No, it's not, because some people work harder than others. Some people use their skill sets and emphasize earning money because that's what they want to do. Other people decide not to work so hard. They value, for example, their families, and value their leisure time, and value their time to read. Everyone has different preferences in terms of what they want to accomplish and what to want to achieve. There are some that put most of their energies in earning an income, and money seems to be the top priority. There are others that don't. Should they equally be rewarded? I would say not. You see, the sad fact is you don't have equality. People aren't equal. Everyone has some unique advantages and disadvantages. That's just life. What Jefferson meant by equality was, first of all, equality before your creator, and also equality before the law. That's what the American people believe. And usually what they mean by equality before the law. Another definition is equality of opportunity. A way to say it is, if you have the talent and inclination, there shouldn't be some arbitrary barriers for you to pursue whatever career or occupation you want. Most people would agree with that. That said, very few Americans, not all, but very few Americans, are really for income equality. Now, the president emphasizes the reverse, that the problem is inequality. Mr. President, you're always going to have income equality. Some people are born with high intelligence, a good work ethic, but to poor parents. Others are not very bright, don't have a good work ethic, but they got lucky. Their parents are fairly well-to-do. Life's not fair. You do with your life what you want, and pursue what interests you. And that's why many people come to America. They can pursue what they want to do, their dreams, either for themselves or for their children. And that might be surprising. Even though there's an emphasis on the individual being self-reliant and having the freedom to choose what occupation to pursue, what interest to pursue, in America, the focus is very much on the family and putting personal consumption behind, for example, their children having the opportunity to go to college. The American people are not for equality in the sense of outcome. It's never going to happen. Because if you did that, what would happen? You're really spreading injustice. You're perpetuating injustice. But more importantly, it would require the government forcing it, using force to get income equality. In other words, the American people would lose their liberty and freedom. Yet that is become Obama's, President Obama's, defining challenge is income equality. Ladies and gentlemen, that's besides a distraction, that is dangerous, because it is our liberty that gives us the ability to pursue what opportunities we want, what careers we want, to pursue how hard we want to work or not how hard we want to work. Like I said, some people prefer leisure to work. They'd rather go fishing or hunting or play sports or have time with the family. There's more to life than work. Other people, the emphasis is the other way. Their life is their work. A lot depends at what they're working at. If you're working at something you truly love, then it doesn't even become work. They're glad they're in a profession or occupation that someone pays them money that they would do for free. I've always really envied people at a very early age that decided what their career would be the rest of their life. I'm sure you've met them, people that knew that they wanted to be a doctor or an attorney, a singer, a baseball player. Early on, they had focused on and decided that is where they, at least most of their young and middle years, wanted to spend most of their time. The typical American has several careers and really hasn't decided until many years later, many years after getting out of college, what to pursue. Part of the challenge is they have to earn a living. They usually have debt incurred as a result of going to college if they pursued a college education. It's only the few very lucky that become somewhat passionate or even bordering on obsession that are fortunate, at least from their point of view, to pursue their love. That could be music, it could be singing, it could be sports, it could be broadcasting, it could be writing, it might be traveling. The point is they're free to do it, and they can do it in America. But as a result of doing it, you're going to get inequality. Some people are not going to have a high as income as others. That's why you get a rather skewed distribution. Now, after saying this, I need to point out there is a difference, an important difference. The American people are generous people, and they understand there are people that are truly unfortunate and needy, and usually no fault of their own, and believe, to a limited extent, that certain government programs should be available to them to assist them, whether it be food, clothing, housing, or medical attention, the truly needy, and most agree to that. However, the same people will say, and I will say, people are taking advantage of those programs, and it appears more and more are. Just look at food stamps. We're at or about 50 million people today taking food stamps. About half of those are children. Now, I believe there are probably at least 25 million, because most of them are children, that truly do need the benefits that food stamps or the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program provides, so-called SNAP. And I do believe that the majority of American people don't begrudge them that. But what they resent, and I've seen it in the shopping stores that I go to, perfectly healthy individuals usually driving fairly nice cars, using SNAP. Who pays for that? Who pays for that? The forgotten man, the American taxpayer. People are taking advantage of various welfare programs, whether it be food stamps, subsidized housing, welfare, disability. And that needs to stop. It doesn't need to be expanded. And that is what the president is aiming for, to expand this. And he truly believes that the answer is more government programs. More government programs. Not recognizing that one of the reasons, I believe, for the income equality that you have today is a direct result of government intervention. If you doubt me, I want you to think about something. What one institution have we had massive government intervention, primarily at the local level? What is that institution? It's the public school system. The public school system. And because of the public school system, namely the failing public school system, not across the board, but in certain, for example, urban areas, cities, people are, I want to say graduating, they're getting a diploma that isn't earned, in the sense that they're barely literate. They barely can read a sentence, yet they get a diploma. Some get a high school equivalency diploma. It is government intervention in education, where everyone gets 12 years of education, and the government runs that, yes, on a local level. But it's our public schools, K through 12, that have failed the American people. Not all of them, but a significant portion of them. The least advantageous. More government spending on education is the answer. Now, he doesn't call it government spending. He calls it an investment in education. But that means more and more taxes to go to education, which is failing, demonstrably failing. I see it on this campus. And what I mean by that, there's probably about a third of the students that enroll in courses that are, being diplomatic, semi-literate. They really can't read, they can't write, and they can't really speak very well. And what happens is, usually after one or two semesters, they drop out. And the reason is simple. If you're going to a college, even a community college, it is expected that you know how to read and write. Unfortunately, those expectations for a significant number of the people that enroll, for example, at Richland, which is one of the better DCC campuses, you still have a high percentage of people that can't do basic reading and writing. And as a result, usually after one or two, sometimes a little longer, they drop out. Throughout the United States, on community colleges, you get more and more courses in so-called developmental courses. That's remedial education for people that have, I won't say wasted, but have had 12 years of education at public expense and still have trouble reading and writing. I'm for second chances, but I'm not for indefinitely at taxpayers' expense paying for people that simply, for whatever reason, lack of motivation, parents, whatever their excuses, can't do what's required of someone that's graduated from any high school in the world. There's a reasonable expectation if you've gone through 12 years, not 1 year, not 6 years, not 8 years, 12 years of education in a public school and you can't read. I'm not saying they can't read a word or two. Obviously, they can. They can't put sentences together. They can't put paragraphs together. They can't write essays. They can't read textbooks. A reading assignment is a challenge. They really don't do it because they can't read. And then we wonder, two big statistics. On the four-year colleges, about half of them never graduate. That's 50% never graduate. It's across the United States. Locally, less than 25% in the DCCD system actually complete their associate degree, which is a two-year program, or, since we have people pursuing certificates, complete a certificate. And that usually involves taking anywhere from 4 to 10 courses. It depends on the certificate. That's a terrifically bad result. You see, results matter. Results count. And where do we have massive government intervention? It's in our schools, both kindergarten through 12th grade, as well as in colleges, where taxpayers are paying a lot of money for people to get an education, and people simply can't complete it, can't meet minimum standards. At some place, you have to draw the line. Some place, you have to say, go to work. Find something that you can do. The problem is the individual. It's individuals' responsibility to educate themselves, not society's. It's the individual's responsibility to take advantage of an education that's being given to them at considerable expense instead of throwing it away, goofing off for 12 years, and then continuing that when they come to Richland College or other colleges. The American people are tired of that. They're tired of providing for people that think they're entitled to it but can't cut it. And that's the emphasis of our president on income equality. Mr. President, there will always be income equality because people are not equal. And you know that. You're not stupid. You understand that. The only reason you're pursuing this is you're incapable, through your economic policies, through your foreign policies, of reducing government spending on the uncertainty that causes it. You think the answer to society's problem is another government program, is more government spending and more taxes. And who gets taxed? It's been called the begotten man. You see what's going on, ladies and gentlemen, and there's a famous essay that I've included in the notes for this program. And I urge you, if you have the opportunity, to read the essay. And it's by William Graham Sumner, and it's called The Forgotten Man. The idea is this. You have groups in society, let's say Group A and Group B, decide that Group C will be taxed, and that money will be given to Group D or F. The forgotten man are the hardworking Americans that pay their taxes. And we have elitists in this country, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Think of it as A and B. Want to tax C, the forgotten man, to give to D. They're well-meaning. They're good intentions. We have to help the poor. We have to help the needy. Most Americans are for helping the needy, the truly needy. What they're not predisposed to is to help people that truly are able to help themselves. That's where they draw the line. And unfortunately, more and more people have their hands out. They have become dependent on the government. They're taxing the forgotten man and taking advantage of the forgotten man. Well, the forgotten man is getting fed up. They've had enough. They've had enough of this socialism, this collectivism, that's what it is, where the government is being used to force individuals to give up their property, to give up the income, and give it to others at the point of a gun, using force. And that's what the president is talking about, using force to get to income equality. Now, he doesn't put it in those terms. He puts it in terms of inequality. And it's getting worse. But why is it getting worse? It's getting worse because the government is destroying the incentives that any society needs to be successful and prosper. Think of it for a moment. Let's say you woke up and everyone got the same pay, exactly the same pay. Would you be motivated to work hard at your job that day? And what if jobs, at that point, jobs would have to be assigned? Who's going to sweep the streets, clean the sewers? That's a job you probably don't want. You see, in America, we have the choice of what professions, occupations, work to do. And that's why people come to America. They're not trapped, like in some societies, in a caste or a class where you're born into it and that's where you will die. You have the freedom to make your situation, your family's situation, much better. And they take advantage of that. They work hard, go to school, do their homework, not only in the public schools, but in college, and then look, and if they're fortunate, find good jobs and work hard at them. In some cases, work overtime. That's what it means by being self-reliant, having a good work ethic. Conversely, there are others that have their handouts. They have not learned to work. They have not learned to read or write or communicate. And more, they think they're entitled to a handout. You should be providing me with food stamps or subsidized housing or a welfare check or disability. Excuse me? Where do you get off? And these are people that are not the truly needed, but people that could work and don't work. You cannot destroy economic incentives, because if you do, you will destroy a society, and people will be at each other's throats. This emphasis by the president and making income equality as his number one priority or challenge is more than a mistake. It is dangerous to our economic system. And that's why he's pursuing it. Now, many of these people are well-intentioned or well-meaning, but that misses the point. If your policies do not result in jobs, your policies are a failure, and you should and will be replaced. You have no one to blame, Mr. President, than yourself. Now, you've had a lot of help from your Democratic pals. But you see, the American people, while they tend to be slow, and many of them simply don't care about politics. They might be slow, but eventually they wake up to what's going on, and they are truly waking up to that. What's going on is this. President Obama is practicing what I call Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you, and there's a long list, food stamps, a welfare check, Section 8 subsidized housing. We'll make it easy for you to go on disability. We'll give you subsidies to get health insurance. We'll provide you with free, note that word, free medical care if you earn below a certain income. And it's tempting to some people. But what that encourages is dependence on the government. It's not self-reliance. It's not encouraging you to pursue your own dreams, your own preferences for career. Because you know, and I know, when the government does this, there's strings attached. They control you. But the quid pro quo is, vote for me, and I'll give you these benefits. Do you want a life of that? I certainly don't. And most people don't. They want to pursue what they're interested in and what they're good at. And if they're fortunate and hardworking and apply themselves, they will be rewarded. And they're always free to change their mind and change their plans and pursue something else if something doesn't work out. I'm sure most of you have tried a job, thought you were going to be good at it, and found A, you didn't like it, B, you weren't good at it, and over a period of time, looked for opportunities elsewhere. That's what America's about. That's the glory of the United States. It's the freedom, the vast freedom for you to work as hard as you want in a career that you want and maybe succeed and maybe fail. There are no guarantees, folks. There are no guarantees. But pursuing income equality is not a dream. It's a nightmare. Yet that is what our president has made his number one priority. Now, I've included a lot of material in my notes. And I urge you, for example, I was aware of these, but I was a little surprised at the number. The late great economist Milton Friedman was an excellent speaker, and he gave a number of speeches at various colleges. But the two that I would emphasize, and they're less than an hour, but one of them really speaks to what I've been just going over, and that is a speech he gave at, I think it was William and Mary, this is many years ago, on equality and freedom. I urge you to spend the time and listen to that. It's right under the YouTube video where Obama says, we need government action to reduce income inequality. We've had government action for over 80 years to do that, and it truly has not succeeded. It has failed. And if you want to know why it's failed, listen to Milton Friedman. Now, if you don't have that much time, I have a shorter clip on the redistribution of wealth. That's less than 5 minutes. And I have other clips, again, from Milton Friedman on this. Now, after you finish that first one, I'd go to the very bottom, near the bottom, where Milton Friedman is talking about what is America. You see, the reason why Americans are a lot well off, much better, even our poor are better off than most people in other countries is we've had this freedom to succeed. And as a result of this freedom, we've had more equality, a lot more equality. Because many of the goods and services that we take for granted today, such as running water, inside toilets, food, groceries, clothing, only the very, very rich, as little as 100 years ago, could afford. What free enterprise capitalism has given the American people, and they've really given it to themselves, is mass consumption of goods and services that at one time only a very small percentage of the population had, and now the entire American people have. We have electricity in almost all, if not all, our homes, for both heating the homes in the winter and cooling them in the summer, as well as cooking our food and storing our food in refrigerators. 100 years ago, only a small percentage of the world's population had this. You see, free enterprise capitalism and the freedom in the United States is enabled not just the richest, but the poorest to have goods and services that at one time very few, if any, had. It does, in the words of the late President Kennedy, a rising tide does rise all boats. So I urge you to, if you have time, to listen to those two videos that are on YouTube, but they're on my page, and you go to it. It's Pronk Pops, that's PronkPops, .wordpress.com. And this is my 250th show, and I started it with my new theme song, my opening music, and I'll do that from here on out. And I also have some ending music that I will play in a moment. But I wanted to, again, urge you to listen to this great economist. I really can't do justice to the material, but he can. But it relates directly to what our president today has made his top priority. You see, good intentions are not enough. It comes right down to that. Good intentions are not enough. Outcomes or results are what really matter. And when the American people elect a president or a congressman or a senator as their representatives, they're expecting them to get results. What they're not expecting is the worst economic recovery since the Great Depression, and that's what we're in. See, for most Americans are doing okay. The vast majority of Americans are doing okay. That's the good news. But there's a significant number, and I'm saying roughly 20 million plus, that cannot find full-time jobs. That should be priority number one of this president and this Congress. And it manifestly is not. They're screwing around, jerking around on a lot of other subjects to distract you from their failures. And their failures is to get government spending in control. Government spending is simply out of control, and that is the primary reason that growth rates have gone down and unemployment rates have gone up. They will never admit that because they think the answer is more government spending. If government spending was the answer, everybody should have a full-time job today. It hasn't worked. Not only in this country, but other countries. It never works because wealth, income, and jobs are created in the private sector. It is a small business owner, when he forms a business and grows his business, that hires workers. And he needs to produce goods and services that the American people want. And if he's successful at it, he can hire more people. We should be encouraging business formation as well as business expansion that leads to more savings and more investment. Are we doing that? No, we're not. We're increasing taxes. This president, I've lost count, it's over 400 proposed tax increases. Now, fortunately, Congress has not obliged him in that area. But there have been a lot of tax increases. Those are disincentives, not incentives to start a business or expand a business, but disincentives. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is big government and out-of-control spending and out-of-control taxes. The last thing we need is more of the same, yet that is exactly what we have, more of the same. And that is why it's rather bad news that it's going to be at least 1,000 days, actually close to 999 days, before Obama leaves office. As far as I'm concerned, good riddance. He's been a disaster. The good news is people are waking up that government is not the answer. Government has failed them and continues to fail them, whether it's in public education or public works projects or subsidies for this and that. Is the economy growing? It's below its historical rate of growth, 3%. Usually when you come out of a recession, and it was a bad recession, you expect the economy to grow at 4, 5, 6, 7%, not below 3%. See, that's the core problem. I always get back to spending. You need to focus in on that like a laser beam. The president and the Democratic Party do not want to limit government spending at all. They want to expand it and tax you more, the forgotten man more. You see, the bottom 50%. Pay less in terms of personal income taxes, less than 3%. Now, they do pay, and this is important, payroll taxes. It's not that they don't pay taxes. They don't pay personal income taxes. It is the top 1, 5, and 10% that pay the overwhelming majority of taxes. When you're at the 10% level, you're over 50% of the taxes come from those people. But in sheer numbers, it is really the middle class that truly bears the burden of taxation and overtaxation. You see, we have too much government, and as a result, we have too much taxes. And that's why today, out of every dollar that the federal government is spending, it has to borrow 35% of it. That is a symptom of spending being out of control. Most people, whether it's an individual, a family, or a business, or your charity, church, city, county, state, they can't run massive deficits like the federal government does. If they do, they would be bankrupt. They would be penniless. They would be broke. But not our federal government. It can issue debt. And what's even worse, they're printing money. Technically, they don't print it. It's the Federal Reserve buying this excessive debt and issuing Federal Reserve notes. Ultimately, this leads to inflation or declining purchasing power of your money. That's just another form of taxation. It's much slower, and it's hard for many people to recognize it, but a 1, 2, or 3% inflation rate over many, many years definitely erodes the value of your money, and that's what's going on. Look at food prices. Look at gasoline price. Look at clothing prices. Look at your cost of electricity. I don't see a trend downwards. I do see a definite trend upwards. Yeah, it's going to fluctuate. You see, I don't think a declining trend in prices is bad. Now, some people do. Oh, it's deflation. We got to worry about deflation. No, we don't. That's a good deal. Most people shop to get lower prices, get a bargain. And you want people to be productive and work in industry that can make its goods and services cheaper and cheaper, because they will succeed and grow. It's the people that find ways to economize in providing goods and services that are successful in business. And that's what we should be encouraging with strong economic incentives and rewards. What we should not be doing is making more and more people dependent on the government. And that's what we're doing with more and more taxes, more and more entitlement programs, more and more welfare programs, and penalizing working Americans. If they're working in terms of taxes, and if they're not working and not being able to find a job because of the very economic policies that are being pursued in Washington, D.C. So we're going to have the president for another 99 days. The only potential sunshine in the future is if the Republican Party take over the Senate and keep the House, which they probably will do. But I'm not very optimistic there. I'm not neither a Democrat nor a Republican. Because the Republican Party, especially the elitist, I don't call them the ruling elite anymore. They're really a bunch of elitists who think they know better. Well, if they really know better, why is the economy in such a mess? If they're so smart, so knowledgeable, they know what's best for me and you, then why have they made a shambles of the U.S. economy through government regulation, more and more government regulation, more and more government taxes, and out-of-control government spending? Why? They're elitist, all right. They're incompetent. It doesn't matter whether they're a Democrat or Republican. That's the problem. They're incompetent. And the only thing that saves them is many Americans, unfortunately, are not paying attention. Because if they were paying attention, many of them would have lost their jobs in the last election and in the prior one. And that's what I'm hoping is going to happen come November 4th of this year. We need to broom them out, you know, both parties. We need to get leadership that will balance the budget and really cut spending. Neither the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party is simply capable of that. You're going to need new leadership in Washington. What are the two things that the president, besides income equality, are pursuing? And how does that hurt the American worker? One is raising the minimum wage. I'm sure almost every speech he gives, we need to raise the minimum wage to $10.10. That's just another example of more government intervention. It really is not the function of the federal government to tell anybody what they should pay or not pay someone else. I'm for abolishing the minimum wage. Because what does the minimum wage do and has done in the past and continues to do today? It deprives young people, especially unskilled, inexperienced people, of the opportunity to get their first or second job. Some do get a job, don't get me wrong, but many do not. And part of the problem is their poor education, but also they're simply not worth the minimum wage. It's not that an employer would not hire them, but when you force it to be, for example, $10.10, and employers discriminate, they're going to say, okay, if that's what I have to pay, by God, I'm going to make sure whoever I hire is not only capable, but works hard. I'm not going to hire people that I would have hired at $5 or $6 or $7 or $8 or $9. They are not going to be hired. So fewer people are hired and fewer people are kept. In other words, you're going to have to be very productive. You're going to have to show up on time. You're going to have to work hard. And you better learn quick or you're out of here. See, that's who it deprives of jobs. It's not the college graduate. It's the people trying to get on that career ladder. It makes it more and more difficult to reach up and climb your way up that career ladder. That's why minimum wage hurts young people. And who does it really hurt the most? Young Black and Hispanics, American citizens. That's who it hurts. That's why the teenage unemployment today is over 20%. And next Friday, I'll go over the unemployment report that should be released on May 2nd and give you my take on it and what's going on. And by then, we should have additional information on the first quarter's gross national product. Now, what I heard today on the news, hadn't had time to really check it out, is that consumer confidence, as measured by the Michigan survey, really jumped up last month. That's good. I truly wish we were in a situation where only a few million people were unemployed. In other words, we were near or at full employment. However, this has been the longest period of such high unemployment rates since the Great Depression. That's why it's the worst economic recovery since then, by far. We're not even at the previous peak in terms of employment, which was in November of 2007. We're going on 7 years, and we haven't reached the previous peak. We're over a million jobs under that. That's a scandal, ladies and gentlemen. Yet we have a president that wants to focus in on income inequality, not understanding, not having a clue that is government programs, government intervention that's causing the problem, making it manifestly worse. Yes, the rich have gotten much richer. Why? Government intervention. Do you really think they were hurt? No. It's the forgotten man, the hard worker that goes to work and pays his taxes. They're the ones that inevitably the politicians, whether Democrat or Republican, they're the ones they tax to take their money and give it to D or F. So if you have time, read that essay and also watch one or more of the clips from the late, great economist Milton Friedman. And I have a number of them included. And I concluded with, and I debated on this, and I'm just going to point it out, at the very bottom before the essay on the forgotten man by Sumner, I have a clip, it's about 60 years old, from Ayn Rand, and she's predicting the end of the Republic. I'm not that pessimistic. I think we still have not a long period, but a period of maybe 10 years at the most to turn this around, and it needs to be turned around. Because if it isn't, it's not so much. Empires don't decline in a day. They decline over many, many years, as does republics. And our republic has become an empire, and it's an empire in decline, primarily because of poor economic policies. And as a result, we have become a warfare and welfare state. However, it is definitely possible to revive freedom and capitalism and have a peace and prosperity economy if we elect the right representatives and right leaders and people come forward that show that ability. I'm not as pessimistic as Mrs. Rand was, but nor am I as optimistic as Milton Friedman was. I think he would be surprised to the extent to which the U.S. economy has really declined in the last 12, 13 years. And the other thing, and I'm just going to mention it, besides the minimum wage, to open up our borders, and that's exactly what the president is doing, to illegal immigrants, does irreparable damage to unskilled Americans. Your high school dropouts, as well as those that got a diploma that have trouble reading and writing, because they have to directly compete with those illegal aliens. And there are not 11 million of them. They're somewhere between 30 and 50 million. And when that becomes known, then we'll have civil unrest. Then we will have rioting in the streets. And that's when we probably will be back to the 60s, when that's exactly what happened. But this time it'll be a lot worse. Now I want to close my show today with some music that in the future I will use as my closing, going out of the show music. Your exit music, I don't know what they call it. And I've debated long and hard on this and debated. I'm not going to tell you the title of it. It's a classical piece, a very famous one. But I chose it because it's a sense of what a people, it's music celebrating the triumph against an empire. And you hear the bells and cannons roaring. So with that, I want to say you've been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you. Have a great weekend. And now my closing music.